This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
Touring with Pearl Jam for years all around the world, I never forgot my love of comic books. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to present the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 133, sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service, Netflix, and Jim Hanley's Universe. Hello and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. I'm so glad that we got to have our special musical guest come in today.
It was really nice of him.
It was good because Neil Young had canceled.
Yeah.
So
you'd think he would have come in when we were in Seattle.
That's right.
Well, we missed each other. It was tough, yeah.
I am Josh. I'm here with...
Ron.
And...
Hello.
Connor doesn't want to say his name. He's holding out on me for some reason. We're from iFanboy.com. That's a little website... multimedia experience we put together for the folks of you out there who like the comic books.
Multimedia experience, 1996.
I go back to a Tandy computer, giant boxy speakers, and
edutainment
that was 12 inches.
Or edutainment.
And we all read a lot of comic books each week. One of us is tasked with picking the best comic book they read that week. That's called the Pick of the Week. There's a written review that goes up on Wednesday nights. On Friday, you can catch a mini video about that show. We get to see it, and then here we come for the discussion about that book and other books in the week and anything else we can get to. As you may or may not know, we're going to talk about the books that came out this past week, so if you haven't read them, we don't want to ruin them for you, so read your books then come back, or skip around, do whatever works for you. But make sure to listen, because it makes it more fun to read your comics.
You should breathe. You should take a breath.
I was teaching him a special technique.
Oh, Eddie Vedder's here.
Yeah.
We're becoming a morning zoo slowly.
We really are.
We're heading to
I just need a bell.
Inexorably, we're the morning zoo.
That other show has a bell. I don't think you should do it.
We had the bell first.
We did have the bell first.
That's true.
All right, I'm just going to go.
Connor, you had the pick of the week.
I did, thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Secret Invasion is the big Marvel event, and if you listen to the show, you've known that we have been slightly down on it to varying degrees, the three of us.
We liked it at the beginning.
I still like it.
You have a lot of bad things to say about the Mighty Avengers issues.
And... Right, yes, I know, I do, but I still like the event, but I think that the observation is that the excitement that we were worked up, the frenzy we were worked up into has dwindled.
Yes. Well, there hasn't been any real payoff yet.
Yes.
Right. Correct. We're still sort of running in place.
But wait, there's good news.
Right, so it was with much great surprise that the pick of the week was Captain Britain and MI-13, number one, which is a Secret Invasion tie-in. And I didn't expect this. I don't think anybody expected this. I don't think you guys probably expected this.
I did not expect this. When I went to iFanboy.com and I went to see what the pick of the week was on Wednesday, because I find out just when everybody else does, I fell out of my chair.
Wow, did you hurt your hip?
Yes, I did, and now I'm in
the hospital. It helped. It was an earthquake at that exact
point. Not so much the pick as the rumbling earth.
Yeah, exactly.
I had bet on it with Stone and Jeff.
He lost.
I came out not on top.
Captain Britain and MI-13 is from Paul Cornell and Leonard Kirk, and it is basically the story of the Skrull invasion, but in England. It's basically showing you that this is not just an American event, this is a worldwide invasion.
Apparently a Skrull war has started?
Yes.
Yeah. All over the world. I was not aware of that.
Neither were we.
And okay. So the story of this is that the MI-13, which is the English intelligence service dealing with supernatural, like MI6, with normal human terms, gathers together Captain Britain and the other English heroes and says, "Fight the Skrulls!" And they go fight the Skrulls. And that's basically it's got the action and adventure and stuff that I was hoping for we'd get out of this big event. Whereas so far we've gotten lots of talkie. Which we like talkie, but sometimes big events need fighting.
It's typified in this issue is that there are actually a lot of splash pages, and not in a bad way. There were splash pages in a good way, where you, they fit. Like for some reason, it really helped you with the scale. It makes Captain Britain is like a big character, which he should be. He should be, every bit to England as Captain America is to United States. And I thought that this was a really good representation of that. For me, it's not something I know too much. I don't know too much about the character, and that's what he should be. I feel and it shouldn't be Union Jack. I guess it should be Captain Britain. That makes more sense.
Union Jack is referenced as being off somewhere fighting Skrulls in this issue. But Ron, I figured, knows the most. The thing is, I liked about this issue was I know Captain Britain slightly. I know Spitfire slightly. I know Black Knight, probably best of all the characters. Pete Wisdom, I know his name. But I was able to get into the story. I was able to follow the characters. I was able to get into their relationships and who they were because what Paul Cornell did was he wrote an exciting... basically is all about fighting the Skrulls, but in the midst of that, you got to know the characters and you had to know everything about them. And everything you needed to know was in this issue. You can go into this without knowing these characters and still enjoy it because the info is on the page.
And even if you had a little bit of knowledge about some of the characters, it was we kind of know the Black Knight from the old Avengers comic books where he was a mainstay in the 80s.
Yep.
He turned into a living sword, I guess, and then he was in sort of like a sword coma.
Coma? It's like a meat coma, but more dangerous.
A little bit.
A little sharper.
Yeah. I never understood, if you ran your finger along the side of the living sword,
the ebony blade?
Yeah, if that would cut your finger when he was a living sword.
Oh,
yeah.
He's
Was he sharp? No, remember he was completely stiff.
He was sharp-witted.
Yeah. Anyway, but you got, depending on your level of exposure to these characters, the issue still worked pretty well.
And I was happy as a pig and shit with this issue because I love Captain Britain from Excalibur. Pete Wisdom was created by Warren Ellis and his run of Excalibur, and he's been an Excalibur kind of mainstay. John the Skrull, the Skrull disguised as John Lennon, which came out of Paul Cornell's Wisdom miniseries that came out about a year ago or so, which you probably should go back and pick up.
I should need to read that.
Which featured four Skrulls who invaded the world in 1963 but decided to take the form of the Beatles and reap those benefits, which is just a great
John
concept.
John Lennon the Skrull? Yeah. Is an element that has been sorely missing from my life. And I was like, yes, John Lennon, Skrull.
I laughed.
Yes.
But what I thought was there were two things about this that I thought was really, really cool. Three things. Is the fact that it was, yes, this is there's a war with, Earth is at war with the Skrulls. And you felt this more than any other Secret Invasion book right now. But then also what was really cool was that it was mixing together the idea of this war and kind of, not politics, but an intelligence agency and a government agency, but with paying mind to the magic and mysticism that is associated with England. At the end of it, the Skrull's target is the Siege Perilous.
Let's give it up for the Siege Perilous.
Woot! which is great.
My favorite thing ever.
Yeah. So you've got Siege Perilous, where Captain Britain got his powers, and the gateway to Avalon, and all this kind of stuff, and you've got you've got that aspect to it, and Wisdom keeps getting kind of these pains, and he feels the sword will be drawn. He's getting this kind of messaging, and as you can see by the last page, the preview for next issue, you see Wisdom pulling out a sword, which is obviously going to be Excalibur, and Black Knight is connected to Arthur Legend and things like that. So it's really, really cool. But then also, what was cool is with the Skrulls themselves and the fighting. In Illuminati, we got our first glimpse at these new kind of Super Skrulls, and it was kind of like half Nightcrawler, half Colossus, and half Black Bolt. But here we're seeing the Morbius, the Vampire Skrull, and Hyperion Skrull, and other, like, you know, sub characters. Yeah, Iron Man Skrull, and you know,
which does the Iron Man Skrull doesn't make any. Anybody can get a suit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like the Captain Britain after the opening sequence with John the Skrull and Pete Wisdom, the Skrull that Captain Britain's fighting is like Ghost Rider, Iceman, Angel. It's just like this weird combination, which actually is probably a Defenders Skrull.
Yeah,
that makes more
sense. I'm not saying I'm bigger than the Supreme Intelligence, or greater than the Supreme Intelligence. It's just that, you know, we're, kids think we're as popular as the Supreme Intelligence.
You read this like that, didn't you?
The whole thing.
Great. It was
Please refer to him by his full name, John Lennon the Skrull.
John Lennon the Skrull, I'm sorry. It's great. And I mean, this is an ongoing, and I hope that this book sticks, because this is so
I just
fun.
Love that it kicked my excitement back up. You know, like, I was so excited after Secret Invasion number one. I've been less excited with each successive tie-in issue. And this is what I've been looking for. I'm looking for a big old summer invasion fight kind of deal.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that was kind of cool about this is that it's an international super team. So it's a British superhero team.
Yeah.
It's based in, like, it's MI-13. Okay, there is MI-5 and there's MI-6. So it's
plausible.
It's plausible. It's rooted in something that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's written by a British writer.
Yeah.
Which is really good because it feels authentic and there's an undercurrent of an inferiority complex going on. You know, America has the greatest superheroes. You know, we have them too. Why aren't we? You know, why isn't Brian Braddock as important as Steve Rogers?
Right.
And that's real. That's actually, like, if you're a British comic book reader, why am I reading American superheroes all the time?
And
in a way that like Omega Flight was not successful.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that because Captain Britain's one of my personal favorite characters, since the late 80s through Excalibur and through all the kind of incarnations, they've kind of taken him on this meandering kind of way, which has been more mystical and more kind of Claremont, you know, kind of these weird kind of concepts. He went in the future, he'd been Britannic.
They just haven't known what to do with him.
Yeah, exactly, and the thing is, like, bringing him, I hate to say it, but bringing him back to his roots and giving him the British flag helmet and, like,
it's a great costume.
Yeah, it's a great costume, and giving him, making him the symbol of England is great. I always love that about the character.
They also seem to bring the Black Knight back to his roots.
I like too that whereas Union Jack is a dude in a suit, Captain Britain is a little more. He's a little bigger physically. He's a little bigger.
He's a big dude.
But he's also sort of connected with mysticism, which to me makes more sense when you think about the history of England. There's a magical sort of quality to that.
Yeah.
He's also blonde, like Steve
Rogers.
There was
a lot that happened. There was a lot in this issue.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel dense. It didn't feel like you were weighed down.
It moved along at a nice clip, but what you had in there was you had good character stuff amidst the action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Black Knight interaction with the Doctor.
She's joined the team.
Yeah, I know. I like that, you know, you do the hard work, I'll steal the glory as Black Knight runs off. You know, like,
she's interesting. There's a female Muslim character that's, that's certainly something to be.
This is great. Which is very, very, very realistic, I think, in terms of what England is.
Modern day, exactly.
Leonard Kirk art.
Great.
It's really good.
Fantastic. Totally fit the story. Like I said, there was the big panels and then the smaller panels.
Captain Britain punches the head off of a Skrull.
Oh, that was great. There was real consequences to stuff.
Exactly.
They were killing them.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Knight was his introduction page is him cutting through a Skrull.
Which is good.
And what was great was that they were recognizing it. They're like, listen, we're soldiers. We know what we need to do. You know, like, mm-hmm. and it's great. I mean, it was good.
So cheers, Paul.
Yeah.
Now this is. Anybody didn't pick this up and follow Secret Invasion is looking for more of the
action side of it,
definitely pick this up.
I'm hoping.
Or any Beatles fans.
I'm hoping this is going to have a big.
That's
nice
why I picked it up.
I think I'm a Skrull.
I think you are.
You're a Super Skrull. You're part John Lennon, part Steve Jones.
I can be any. Steve Jones, hold on. Steve Jones may show up later.
The next issue we're going to talk about is not Captain America. Fantastic Four, number one. Fantastic Four, number one.
That's Alan Davis cover.
Like it was a Fantastic Four issue with the Secret Invasion.
You take off that banner and it's
Fantastic Four, yeah. And again, we go back to this probably should be in Fantastic Four, but the Miller Hitch storyline is keeping this from being. So now this is a 3-issue miniseries, which I understand all the reasons why and all that kind of stuff, but it's still grumble. But you're right; it totally looks like just an issue of Fantastic Four. That's really funny.
Which, in the same way that an Avengers issue looks like Avengers, it's just a Secret Invasion.
Now I wasn't going to pick this up originally, but then I saw Barry Kitson was drawing it, and I really liked Barry Kitson.
It's quite pretty inside.
And so I thought, well, I'll check it out because it's a Secret Invasion tie-in and it's Barry Kitson. And you know, and it was a nice little issue. I thought it was a nice, basically the story of how, in Secret Invasion 1, we saw a Skrull as Sue Storm go in and send a Baxter building into the Enigma Zone. And now this explains, A, how the Skrull took out Sue Storm, B, how the Skrull came into the building, C, how they got rid of the building, and then what happened after in the Negative Zone, which is basically Johnny, Thing, the two kids, Franklin, who's the other kid's, what's the other kid's name?
Val.
Franklin and Val, and then the Skrull posing as Sue.
There's another kid?
Yeah, Valeria. Yeah.
And at first, it's sort of a psychological tale. At first, it's a psychological tale in that the Skrull tries to convince Johnny that the Thing has been a Skrull like for a long time, and Johnny starts to buy it, and he's like, "Ooh, this is gonna be interesting. He's gonna now think his best friend's a Skrull. They're all trapped in a building. It's kind of like a horror movie."
Yeah.
But then within two pages, the Skrull's given up.
Yeah, that's what I love is the when the Skrulls are busted, the walls come crashing down very quickly. What you've got is you've got a great Kitson kind of like a 9-panel page where it's Sue, Johnny, they're having the conversation, and Johnny's, you know, he's thinking, and Johnny has the reputation of not being the smartest member of the Fantastic Four, and so finally he's like, "All right, well, if you're Sue, what's your favorite movie?" And the Skrull kind of rolls his eyes, and then actually says The Graduate, and Johnny's like, "No, it's West Side Story," and this girl's like, "You got me," and then turns out it's Lyja, which is a Skrull, a female Skrull who has a long history with the Fantastic Four and Johnny and all that kind of stuff. So, which is interesting. The thing about the Skrull invasion is that it's just so personal against the Fantastic Four, which I think is just so, you know,
which would all the more make it be why is this a little spin-off? Why is this?
That's my point.
It is a little weird because the Skrull is a Fantastic Four enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
And. I mean, I guess Reed is in the Illuminati.
But Reed is the main focus of
Reed,
the
It all boils down to Reed...
is a dick.
No, Reed hypnotizing those first three Skrulls into cows. Like, that's what it is. Like, that demoralizing effect, and then, of course, destroying their planet. That's it.
do you think that if they was not cows, and they was some other animals, that it would not be as big of a war on Steve Jones here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's weird. I mean, he's the focus. I mean, the reason they hate it's like Doom. Yeah. Doom hates Reed, and the Skrulls hate Reed as a douche. That's why.
Well, now they've made him hate Tony. Yeah. So that's, I guess,
that's almost what the genius of what Marvel's done is that we've made all of us hate Tony, and then you've got these people coming in hating Reed, and Tony can save the day. Tony will be redeemed.
I like Tony. I think he's a good mate. He's a good bloke.
Now, the issue that came out that a lot of people thought was going to be my pick of the week, which people very loudly proclaimed on the website, was Batman 676, which is the first issue of the RIP storyline, which has been touted for quite a while. Grant Morrison's status quo changer.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it wasn't pick of the week, although I enjoyed it, was that... nothing really happened.
Well, it's a start. It's the first issue, right?
Right, exactly.
And what did happen was not entirely clear. I wasn't entirely clear. Like there, at the end, the Joker shows up, and I didn't know, was he in Arkham Asylum? Was it not?
The Joker was in Arkham Asylum. He's talking to a doctor. The doctor shows him a Rorschach test. Joker says he sees a flower. I think he sees a flower.
Uh huh.
But what we go into his head, and what he really sees is him having killed Nightwing, Robin, and Commissioner Gordon.
See, I don't think I got that.
Which is a great two pages.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And then the power goes out. The black hand shows up. The black glove shows up, and black hand's the Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, yeah.
The black glove shows up, and the Doctor's dead, and they're busting the Joker. The Joker looks freaking terrifying.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like, even though I was confused, I was still like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's grisly.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite grisly.
This ties in totally with basically, Morrison's almost entire run here is going to tie into this series. The Joker stuff ties into that Joker prose issue.
Mm-hmm. The classic Joker prose issue.
Controversial Joker prose issue. The Black Glove has been orchestrating a lot of the. If you go back and read the old issues, like there's that 10 little Indian storyline.
Who is this gathering of villains?
This is the Black Glove.
And these are all
the Black Glove's a person or a group?
That's the question.
These are the people.
But
who
are those people then?
At least
who's the Lucha Libre?
We'll find out.
Okay.
So we don't.
Who's
know.
The mime? This is a great grouping of people, by the way. This is fantastic. A mime, a Lucha Libre, some dude in a radiation suit. This is great. Like some knight. This is a great group.
What I do like is that this is Morrison's whole arc coming together.
Yeah.
And I love that sort of long-term epic planning, like these things that don't seem to make any sense.
Lots of people thought, like, they read an arc and go, well, that was stupid. It was a throwaway arc. I'm not going to pay attention. And then you're finding out now that everything was important.
Well, you know, that's true. And but the thing was, reading them, I wasn't really enjoying all those stories. I didn't read all the arcs that he did. I'd come on for some and hang out and not really have a good time and go back. I wonder if it's going to be the kind of story where really to get anything out of it, you will have had to have read those. Or if I could jump on now and be okay. But
as Josh falls asleep again.
That'll be boring, yeah. Jesus. I thought the interactions between Batman and Robin with the new Batmobile and then Robin and Alfred were really good. Who is this chick?
The one that Batman's
kissing, yeah.
Jezebel Jett.
What hero is she?
She's not a hero. She was like a supermodel or something like that.
And she knows he's Batman.
Batman's
become like Daredevil. It's like
she figured
knows.
It out in the last issue. Yeah. She's just
because it just so happened that the shadow on the wall looked exactly like Batman, so.
Bruce just taking his costume off all through the hallway. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean,
he's in love.
I think if this issue had more answers and less questions, then it might have been a pick of the week candidate. But it really is. It's too much of a setup issue.
Do we know if R.I.P. stands for rest in peace, or is it like, is he just going to take a vacation with the girl?
Well,
and it's roses in Paris. Maybe it's not that.
We did see the pins that DC had at Emerald City Comic Con, which had a picture of Robin that said, "I am Batman."
I think the very heavily foreshadowed thing is that he's going to retire, and that leads to someone else being Batman. And that way, they can just bring him back.
And then eventually, he will lead an.
Is he going to retire? Is he going to retire to go off with the chick?
I don't know.
Well, she's going to get killed, and then he's going to lead an.
Well, if you saw the interview with Grant Morrison in the Udia show, he said he's basically taking it as all the Batman comics ever were took place in the last 15 years of his life.
Yeah.
What kind of effect did that have on a man?
He's been through a lot.
Heavily foreshadowed, he's just going to say, I'm tired.
Yeah, enough of this. I know how
he's actually going to end his war on crime.
I know how he feels.
Yeah, exactly.
This is episode 1000. Oh God, kill me, iFanboy.
Superman 676. Also, Batman 676. So the same.
I noticed that. They're both are the same issue. Yeah.
Wait a minute, that don't make sense.
Yeah.
Full disclosure
that the writer Vito Del Sante is a personal friend of ours who we've known the last couple of years.
I don't know him.
So we kind of have privy to the behind the scenes saga that this issue has been.
It's just great to see this story get put in print. Vito Del Sante, he works at Jim Hanley's universe, and that's where we met him. But he's also been doing a lot of indie comics and working on getting his work out there.
You should see him in episode 2 of the iFanboy video podcast. Exactly.
This story was originally supposed to be in Superman Confidential, but due to the scheduling mishaps of that book, it never saw print. And it's great to see it appear not only in print but in freaking Superman, like the Superman Ross cover.
He gets put under the belt.
Not only Alex Ross cover, but Alex Ross cover depicting a scene from the story, which is awesome.
Even if you don't like Alex Ross, that's got to be cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's got to be cool for him.
And I picked this up. I don't normally read Superman, but I thought I could totally see why this was going to be a confidential. It's totally a one-shot kind of, you know, it's a tale of the past. It's Superman recounting his first Memorial Day in Metropolis and dealing with Solomon Grundy, and then Alan Scott Green Lantern gets involved.
And the thing about that being that, you know, in the past, at some point in DC Universe history, it became sort of the given thing that Alan Scott was the sort of Superman. He was the alpha,
the big
superhero,
the big gun,
right, of the pre-war hero.
He's almost like the most badass World War II veteran there is.
Yeah,
you know, like they look at the respect given to the JSA is like the respect that people give to the World War II veterans, and he's like the alpha dog.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. It fits the legacy aspect of the DCU.
I think that it does. One of the things that I really appreciated about this issue is that it ties in very well to the father to son legacy. You know,
my dad's favorite superhero. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that James Robinson was the one who first started making Alan Scott the big dog.
Yeah.
Because that was in the Golden Age, it was like that, and in Starman,
right,
he was the big superhero.
I thought this was a nice, fun one shot. If you like Superman, this is a good sort of classic tale. He did really well, I thought, with the Daily Planet stuff.
Yeah,
the Jimmy Perry stuff.
Yeah,
and there was a fantastic scene that I loved where meteors are coming down. Seemingly meteors are coming down, and then the whole newsroom just goes into a tizzy. Papers are flying, people are running around, and you just see Clark walking through the middle of the
calmly
of the madness. He's going to go save it. I thought that was a very nice little touch.
A story where you have Solomon Grundy and Bizarro show up, and to have it not suck.
Yeah, it's really.
Yep. Lex, it ties into the Man of Steel.
Yeah, the ending ties into John Byrne's Man of Steel, which I thought was retconned out of continuity, but I guess it doesn't matter in the confidential sense. Yeah. I guess it's all in continuity.
And we're back in regular Superman now, so you tell me.
Yeah.
But it was a really nice one-shot, and the next month starts James Robinson, which Josh has to buy.
I don't know. He doesn't like
it. You can buy it and read it over your shoulder. With a mirror.
I won't really look.
But congratulations, Vito. Yep. It was a good book, and damn, that's awesome. All you aspiring comic writers, it could happen.
Yep. You know? So if you're in New York and you want to congratulate Vito, you go to Jim Hanley's Universe. It's one of America's best and most progressive comic book stores. Jim Hanley's Universe offers the best selection of comic titles and related merchandise from manga to mainstream to mini. I did that out of order. I threw myself off. Jim Hanley's Universe has it all.
We got it.
Jim Hanley's Universe is located opposite the Empire State Building. That's when Vito's at. In Midtown Manhattan and at 325 New Dorp Lane in Staten Island, you can visit Jim Hanley's Universe on the web at jhuniverse.com or myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. Jim Hanley's Universe, where art and literature meet.
Yay.
That is a Spider-Man comic you wanted to talk about.
Well, first
there was Batman Confidential. Number 17, which was probably the only book that was really close to being the pick of the weekend. It's disappeared, but we'll talk about it anyway.
We lost it. Josh lost it.
Fabian Nicieza?
Nicieza. Yep.
I'll never in my life get that correct, but...
It's a tough name.
On writing, and Kevin Maguire on art, interiors, full interiors. First of all, Fabian Nicieza wrote the only good issues of the Ra's al Ghul crossover. He showed me a surprising knack for the Batman characters.
Yep.
So it's a story of Batgirl, Barbara Gordon's first meeting with Catwoman. She's just been Batgirl for a little while. She's just gotten approval from Batman to be officially part of the club.
The Bat family.
And she meets Catwoman. Catwoman steals Jim Gordon's notebook. And so she's chasing her down. And because you assume there's important information in that notebook. And he's got a great handle on the personalities. I think he does a fantastic Barbara Gordon. I know Ron. He really liked his Catwoman.
Oh yeah, no, I thought he did. He wrote a great device, and basically it's a chase through the city.
Yeah.
And Catwoman is very dismissive of Batgirl, and Batgirl is almost like, okay, you know, here I am. I'm early in my career, and I got to do this by myself. And so you get the double narration of Batgirl and Catwoman during the chase, and I thought it was really great characterization. It was really good, and their interaction, and then the ending was hysterical. It was great. It basically Catwoman trying to lose Batgirl runs into the Gotham Hedonist Club, which is a nudist swingers club, and
sex club,
and Batgirl can see Catwoman in there, and they won't let Batwoman in, Batgirl in, unless she goes naked. And she's like, "Well, I can't do that." And the guy at the door is like, "Yeah, your friend said you wouldn't." And she's like, "Oh, it's like this whole one-upping game." Yeah. And it basically ends with Batgirl, you know, in her head, she's thinking, "What would Batman do? Would he go to get naked?" And you know, and probably
damn
he wouldn't.
Right, he would.
No, but and then it ends with a hot Maguire, Batgirl with her back turned to the reader.
Such fanboy porn.
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, yeah, come on.
She's a healthy back, by the way.
Yeah.
I was slightly disappointing to see that, but only slightly. I mean, Maguire draws really attractive women, so they've always sort of given him, in later years, sort of the girl books.
Like
he did the Marvel pinup. That's just what they give him to draw, and I'll take anything he draws.
It was good though. I mean, the facial expression.
He's fantastic. He gets better and better. I just hope he does all five parts.
Yeah,
you know, because you never really know until they all
that's
happen. I remember he did that.
Yeah.
The Captain America miniseries about his origin, and it was Fabian Nicieza also.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
and he
that.
Did like issue one, issue two, half of issue three, and then it went to somebody else who was not good at all and ruined the whole thing.
You know who's really good? Marcos Martin, the penciler on Dan Slott's, I don't know if it's a one shot or story arc, Amazing Spider-Man number 559. Yeah, part one. Amazing Spider-Man number 559. Marcos Martin, out of nowhere, I've never heard of this guy. I'm reading this, and I was just so excited during it. I'm like, oh my god, this is great.
I don't read this title, and Connor showed me the book, and I was like, wow, that's really nice. It's this beautiful blend of, it's new, it's modern, but it's also, I sound so lame, but it's true. Like, I see a little bit of Darwin Cook, I see a little bit of John Romita.
Tim Sale.
I see Tim Sale, I see... I think you said
Allred.
Yeah,
but it's also in a 60s style.
I mean, it's Steve Ditko, you know?
And yeah, exactly. Smaller Spider-Man eyes. Spider-Man. Yeah, me too. And then what you got is you got Slott writing a. This I'm gonna go out on a limb and say this is the best single issue since Brand New Day started, and it's got a. It's got a villain. What's the character's name that we get into? Screwball, which is a girl robber who is live broadcasting on the internet with her crimes, and you can watch them and is making money that way. Very steeped in today, but it still feels like
doesn't even care about the money she's stealing because she's making more off the
online
the online stuff. But
And had Daily Bugle stuff.
The other story is that because she's live streaming, they're getting better images from than Peter takes, so they don't want to buy his photos anymore.
Yep. So he becomes a...
They make him a paparazzi, because he can get really good paparazzi shots, so he has to go like sneak into a club and take shots of this actor. And,
yep.
And it's kind of realistic in that sense. I would love it.
And it was a convenient way to allow him to make a lot of money for a good paparazzo shot and to get his apartment. Now he's moving out of Aunt May's place. And, sorry, you would love it?
No, I would love it if they announced tomorrow that they were going back to monthly and Marcos Martin was the regular artist.
Yeah.
So I would die.
Hands down.
There are at least two pages here, which just from flipping through it stand out to me. There's one where he's walking sort of on the side of a building.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they've used... the building is basically filling up the whole frame. And they've used panels to show him in different... places and times.
Yep.
Without changing the background. Gorgeous panel. Another sort of the same thing is there's a cutaway shot of a staircase, and it's Peter Parker flipping around and fighting, in different places, all on the same page.
And he's as the paparazzi, he's taking pictures as he's jumping to get away from security.
Right.
And what you've also got the Peter Parker, but with the spider sense going off and the face going half Spider Man. Oh, so good.
I did not expect that when I opened the issue. But I was like, "Wow!"
Yeah, this was great.
It
was
beautiful.
For me, I like the story. But if you put Zeb Wells and Marcus Martin on the book monthly, it would jump to like a top 10 book for me.
I think this Marcus Martin guy. I'm going to watch him. I got the same feeling.
I feel like I've seen his name before, but
I'm going to look to see everything he's done, and I'm going to buy everything he puts out after this. That's how much he sold me on this.
No, he's like Carl Kershaw, instant favorite.
What if this is his like first time working in this style?
Fantastic. I know, yeah. He's been...
like he's been out of. Yeah.
What if his next book is about Nazis? How awesome that was.
So, real quick...
I'm glad you like my book.
So Wolverine number 65 is the last issue of the Jason Aaron, Ron Garney arc, which is kind of... just keep these guys on this book. Just, oh, God.
I heard a rumor they're going to come back after the 12-issue...
They should.
Miller, but I feel like it's going to be...
A year.
It's going to be like Mark Waid, Ron Garney.
Or the Guggenheim return to Wolverine.
Which is good.
Sometimes you just can't. But I personally thought this issue ended a bit of a thud.
Well, that's because ultimately it ended with the Wolverine not actually killing Mystique and leaving the gun.
Point of the story was Scott Summers, Cyclops, good old Boy Scout, says... you need to go kill her.
Yeah, but he's a Skrull.
Maybe, but...
Do you think he's a Skrull?
He's acting very out of character. That's all.
I think that you're talking about what is Wolverine about and what does he do?
Yep.
And the crossroads at the end of this is, does he do it?
Yep.
I think he should have.
Yep.
And I'm not saying because...
it sort of invalidated the whole...
Yeah, I mean, that's because a whole theme of this, and there's a big argument between Wolverine and Mystique during this, where Mystique is just like, why do you think I keep double-crossing the X-Men? Mm-hmm. It's what I'm always going to do. It's who I am, and honestly, it's who you are, and you're going to do it eventually. Eventually, you're going to turn your back on them, because that's who you are.
Because it's about how he double-crossed his team back then. But then
with her, the flashback from the 30s.
She was going to screw them.
But Wolverine is always about redemption, how he's not an animal and how he's not going, So I wasn't surprised that he didn't kill her. Like, basically, he left her wounded for dead in the desert with a gun, and he's like, you'll figure out what to do.
She's Mystique. That's the thing, is that he's the best he is at what he does.
Yeah.
So do it. And also, he spent five issues saying, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Right. I am going to kill you. And so. Anything less than that, when you say something will happen, that thing has to happen.
Yeah.
Even if it gets invalidated later.
Yeah.
I feel like Marvel took the teeth out of it.
Even if he kills her, walks away thinking her dead, and then we see she's not dead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At least to him, he thinks he's killed her.
Yeah.
The fight was brutal, though. By the way,
it was. But I just feel like
exactly.
I feel like you get a guy like Jason Aaron scalped, and you put him on the book like this, and you sort of take the teeth out of his story because he can't do a Jason Aaron story, because eventually, he can't kill Mystique.
Yeah.
But it just felt like it kind of invalidated the entire arc for me. It's just kind of like...
Yeah. One book that had a really good ending, I thought, was the fifth issue, number five of BPRD 1946. Mm-hmm. Mignola and Josh Dysart take you back to the Bureau of Paranormal Research and
Development.
Development?
Yes.
Back right after World War II, they're in Berlin in 1946, and they're basically trying to find all of Hitler's occult and macabre experiments and
more
things
Nazis.
Like that. Well, you know what's funny about this series is that half of it is very rooted in realism, but then by the end of this, they, like there was soldiers and they were at the end of the war and they were tired. But by the end of this, there were like the giant gorilla robot cyborgs and heads in jars and vampires and demons and like
everything I hear about this miniseries sounds good.
Oh, beautiful art by Paul Azaceta, I believe is the name. You know, it was just a good mini. I haven't read all of the BPRD stuff, but yeah, I was able to pick this up and read it. There's going to be a 1947 that is going to happen.
Really?
Yeah, look for next week in the middle of the week. We're going to have a mini where we talk to Josh Dysart about this series and the other one that's coming up.
He's so enthusiastic.
He's great. He was really cool.
He was good. Yeah. This was this
that's
was
a good. Really, definitely check that mini out.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite Hellboy thing that I've read since I read Hellboy, basically. Wow. So I really dug it.
I'll be looking for the collection.
Cool.
So that's our view. What you can do if you go to iFanboy is you can also talk about DMZ.
One of my other books.
I'm excited about that.
No.
Cutting those books.
Okay. No, DMZ number 31 from Vertigo. I know you guys read it in trades, yeah. And we haven't talked about it that much. Actually, I thought the past year of DMZ has been a little weak. Has been a little kind of after the it kind of burst.
I thought the fourth trade was really good.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it was the story of the.
It's one of those trade.
You've read four though.
I haven't borrowed any of your books since the second one.
Okay, four was really strong.
Well, I just thought the past couple of issues have the last couple of arcs when it did some of the. I did like that one shot with the scrape. Paint graffiti, whatever. But we're right now at issue number three, part three of six in this Blood in the Game story arc, which is basically they're trying to put a leader in the provisional government into the DMZ area, and how the government is trying to put their kind of puppet in place, and a leader amongst the people emerges. This guy Delgado in the Bronx, and he's rallying the people, and Maddie kind of gets I forget his first name. Maddie gets thrown in with his kind of campaign, and he's kind of reporting, but he's also kind of getting, you know, kind of
caught up in
the what's the Stockholm syndrome kind of, yeah. You know, yeah, he's kind of drinking the Kool-Aid. And this was the first issue in a while where it just ended, and I was just like, oh damn, I was like I can't wait for the next issue.
The fourth trade was about the army unit charged with murdering.
Yeah, that one was really deep and down.
It was really strong.
Probably better in trade form than issues. Because
no, I don't even think it was that. It was just very heavy.
Heavy over 6 months.
Yeah.
Is harder to take than heavy over an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You know, or however long it takes.
That was a really strong one. You need to catch up on those because that was really good.
I would like to do that.
And finally, Serenity, Better Days, number 3 of 3 from Dark Horse. Dark Horse needs to have an ongoing Firefly Serenity book because I want this in my life a lot. These three
I'll
issues
get you into my life.
These three issues were fantastic. It's like I think we've talked about all three issues every time they come out because it's like an episode of Firefly. It's so much fun and the guy writing it has got the characters' voices down. You
Brett
hear
Matthews.
Them in your head. Yeah, it's so good. And I hope they do like a season.
Is this
season
this,
one again or season
does this
two?
Does take place before the movie?
Yes, it does.
It does. So everybody's alive.
Yes, I haven't watched the movie yet, so yes.
So Jane's still alive.
Yeah, stop. everyone's
is got both arms?
Everyone's still alive. Stop. So, it's just really, really good. I hope they
do. So the chick's still a chick. She was a man.
But it was just great. It was just, please, please, please do it. So
you read that in Buffy, but you don't read Angel, right?
Correct, yeah. I never watched Angel on TV. So
all three of those books are supposed to be just
great,
wonderful continuances of that. Which
I hear mixed things about Angel. Like it's almost universal praise for Serenity, universal praise for Buffy. But I do hear people say Angel's not as good.
Well, you're biased because you think it should have ended.
No, I'm not biased. I'm just saying what I read. Other people are biased. Other people, like our users, who when they go to our website, they can pull their books and then read them and rate them.
Yep.
And occasionally, we like to highlight a few of their reviews. And the first one is from Pisces Paul, who reviewed Titans number 2 and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 1 out of 5.
I hope you're not buying the next issue, Paul.
He says, "Dear God, why am I still reading this? I wanted to like, this so much."
That sums it up really well.
I really did. I pushed through the cheesecake artwork during issue 1 in the hopes that the story would be keep me hooked. I've enjoyed most of Judge Winnick's work, but it all came crashing down this month. Rarely do I criticize too much because, well, quite frankly, I'm not getting paid to write and I can't draw. But really, this story is quickly going off the rails. It's always hard for me to break up, so I'm dropping this abusive relationship before it gets really bad.
It's harsh, man. You wanted to like it.
Did you guys all...
I picked up Titans 2, and I was glad to see Churchill was off it, but The D-Diz wasn't much better.
But then not.
It was almost worse.
Yeah. No, it was more than almost worse. It was pretty bad.
Churchill had occasionally panels that were okay, whereas this was like...
Some of Winnick's dialogue was all right.
I like the story.
Yeah, I like the story, yeah. It's
I think
fine.
The story is a fine classic Titan's Tale of...
Although we were laughing about they just can't get it further away from Aqualad, can they?
Yeah, like where's Aqualad? He's in the ocean somewhere.
Yeah, it's like Arthur's looking for him. He'll be fine. It's like they just totally dismiss him.
But the art is just...
Yeah, I didn't buy it. I just didn't enjoy the first one.
Such a misstep.
It's painful.
I don't know how they even think that's okay.
Yeah. Goat77 wrote in, did a review of Last Defenders number 3, which is written by Joe Casey. I forget who the artist is. He gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And Goat77 says, I wanted to like this series so much. She-Hulk, great. I love Shulky. Colossus, great. I love the all different X-Men. The two other characters, cool. I can dig obscure characters. Sigh. I'm finally dropping it. The story's incomprehensible, and the issue's leaving me feeling that I've wasted my money. It's too bad, too, because I thought the art was pretty good. And unfortunately, I can't disagree with Goat77 anymore.
Yeah.
It's
getting better every
issue. The thing you got to understand about The Last Defenders is that it's not about She-Hulk, it's not about Colossus, it's about Nighthawk.
Yeah.
And it's about the legacy of the Defenders, and Nighthawk desperately trying to hold on to his team.
This team which cannot succeed.
Exactly.
Are you
and
still on it,
Josh?
I haven't actually read this one, but yes.
Yeah. To the point where this issue, he goes out and hires Paladin and like a bunch of other mercenaries.
It's not just Joe Casey on it, it's Keith Giffen.
He's plotting, in case he's doing the dialogue. Yeah, so it's you got.
But now you've got like Doctor Strange shows up in this one, and isn't Namor? They thought Namor was.
No,
was
Son of Satan is whatever that character's name is.
Damien Hellstrom.
Yeah. The Blue Atlantean. They thought it was Namor, but it was the other guy.
Right.
But I think I like the conceit that every time, every new issue, he gets a new team.
Yep.
And by the end of the issue, the team's falling apart.
Yep, exactly.
He's so desperate to keep the Defenders together that he keeps trying to bring a team together.
It's like a serial marrier.
And I actually really liked it more and more.
I thought three
was the best one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think three has been the best issue so far. So
it was fun.
So if you got an opinion on the comics that came out this week, head over to ifanboy.com/comics and be sure to pull all your comics every week, and then you can come back and rate and review them. And if you need to purchase your comics, you should head over to Discount Comic Book Service. They've got monthly specials up to 75% off all the comics.
Yeah.
They do 40% off the major publishers.
Yep.
They offer a flat rate shipping of $5.95 for all orders, so no matter how much you get, it's just $5.95.
Yeah.
You can pretty much anything that comes out in previews and Diamond's catalog, you can purchase.
Yeah.
They've got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and ready for order, so you can go buy trades there as well.
Yeah.
And finally, they got a great website at dcbservice.com where you can track all your orders online. If you're looking for any sort of online retailer, dcbservice.com is the one you should check out. And also, don't forget, over at InStockTrades.com, they've got our Book of the Month, Hellboy Library Edition Volume 1, for 40% off.
Yeah.
So, DCBService.com, InStockTrades.com, great folks to do business with.
My knee is popping.
I'm sorry.
I'm getting old. I feel like I'm back in the airport plane.
Airplane. There's been a lot of flying.
Viewer email time. Dan P. from Toronto, Ontario, Canada says, I picked up Mighty Avengers 13, and after reading it, I was left feeling a little annoyed by the Layla Miller appearance. While it bothers me, my gripe is unrelated to Layla being there despite being stuck in the future. My problem is with the recent trend of artists trying to sexualize Layla Miller. In Mighty Avengers, she's shown in her underwear, and during Messiah Complex, there was
she's 13, 14?
We'll get to that. There was a scene of her naked in the shower and arriving at the mutant camp in the future. Isn't Layla Miller supposed to be around the age of 12? Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I remember her being, and every time she's drawn naked or scantily clad, it bothers me. Something about it just isn't right. Do any of you agree with my point? Also, am I wrong? Is she older? He's correct.
Yeah, no, I remember.
And I feel the same way.
In Mighty Avengers, I winced because I was just like, oh.
No, she's totally 12 or 13, and it totally freaks me out when I see her. Like,
it should be noted that there was a complaint about the Mighty Avengers in the last episode.
Let's address this before we get there. Yeah.
I thought the same things in the shower scene and thing.
No, when she answered the door of Mighty Avengers and she was in that like cute that the underwear tank top thing, like who answers the door like that? And even like it was just a little too sexual.
David though has played with her sexuality in terms of
hinting at it very generally
in a
but
way
it hasn't
that
been
is,
overtly
right,
sexual.
Right, it's very subtle, but there's a comic book artist thing that happens.
Yeah.
You know, where they over-sexualize. The X-23 problem, as it, you know what I mean? Like, in some places she's drawn as a big busty model, and other times she's the 13-year-old she is.
Right. Maliv did a great job of drawing her.
It was inappropriate.
Yeah, it was inappropriate. So, but to get to the other thing, so we talked about Mighty Avengers last week, and I had a little continuity freak out. I'm sorry. I missed the box that said 6 months earlier. I read a lot of comics. I apologize. And thank you to the 17,000 people who emailed me directly to tell me that. And I love how every email started. I'm sure everyone's pointed this out to you already, but my God. So please... Yes, I'm sorry.
We did something wrong on another show earlier.
Oh, Teen Titans number 3.
And then there's also Teen Titans number... We talked about...
Teen Titans year 1 number 3. I had said...
We talked about number 4. We were talking about issue 4.
Right. We talked about issue 4 saying that the plot had been disregarded. We didn't know what happened to the whole mentors being crazy thing. Ron agreed with me. Turns out, Ron somehow missed issue... It was unresolved issue 3. Ron missed it.
I completely missed it. We went to the comic book store yesterday and Connor was like, oh, here's that Teen Titans issue where it was resolved. I said, I've never seen that comic before in my life. Like, I completely missed it when it came out. And so I bought it and read it, and yeah, it wraps up the story pretty nicely, too.
My only defense is it was really, 4 was really late. I forgot about 3.
So the one thing to note is that we're only human and we make mistakes too.
Actually, I made no mistakes. Should be noted.
Yeah, watch some of the videos.
That's what the asterisk is for.
The asterisk report.
All right, cool. So on to our next email. It comes from Teddy. Teddy says, I'm 27 years old but new to comics. I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan and this led me to check out Astonishing X-Men, which I've loved. This sparked my interest in reading everything I could get my hands on. The TV guide. I'm perfectly willing to read as much as I have to and buy as many books as I need to. What I'm looking for isn't just a good jumping in point. And so I ask you, where do I start? I've already started reading all the books on the top 10 lists out there, Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, and more. That's not what I'm asking about. Because of my slight obsession with continuity, I've become interested in Marvel's Ultimate Universe because I can realistically read everything. He keeps capitalizing everything in this email.
I was going to ask, are you doing that?
I understand that this is not possible in the main Marvel and DC universes.
No.
I want to get, quote-unquote, caught up with the current worlds. I'm in no hurry. I'll read as much as I have to. Even, quote-unquote, bad books, if they're central to the history. How many years back do I have to go back to truly understand what's happening in DC? When did they throw it all out the window and reboot? How about Marvel? I know that some of you will say to forget about it and just find a good story and go with it. I wish my brain worked that way.
I think Teddy's in oil. Apparently, that's because he must have lots of
big.
Cash
he's in Texas. He lives in
these comics.
He also has massive obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah, well, a couple of things straight out of the gate is Marvel has the Essentials line, and DC has the Showcase line.
Yeah.
Those are great black and white newsprint cheap reprints of like all the old comics.
He's not worried about money.
Right, well, not
on eBay. Buy every issue.
He can get all the stories collected together in one.
Yeah. It's hard to read everything. You can't, I mean...
DC...
It's almost impossible to start anywhere. You're going to have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You have to pick... No matter what point you pick, there's comics you haven't read before unless you're going to go back to 1963 and start... When did Marvel start?
Marvel started really 62.
So unless you go back to 1962 and start reading all the Marvel
61.
Books, you're going to have to pick a spot.
That would literally take you years. Yeah. Years and years and years and years and years. Just because there are thousands of comics.
And for DC, you could start with Infinite Crisis, but that's still not going to give you the whole story. You could start with Crisis on Infinite Earths, but that's still not going to give you the whole story.
Yeah, yeah.
At some point, you're going to have to just put a line in the sand and say, I'm starting here.
What a really good thing to do is to go back to a beginning point. So go back to an omnibus.
Yeah.
Read that. You find threads that you like and follow those threads and keep it going that way. If you want us to tell where you should start to read everything, then go buy everything.
Yeah, go to every comic book, go to every convention, buy every back issue in the quarter bin, and just start reading. But you focus on the Avengers, get the Essentials, get the hardcover collected edition. They're reprinting a lot of them. Like Spider-Man is all out on DVD. You can go pick them up and read
X-Men,
everything. Spider-Man, same thing with X-Men. Pick something and just go with it. But the thing is, you're not gonna the mainstay titles, the Justice Leagues, the Batmans, the Supermans, the X-Mens, the Avengers. You'll be able to find, but you're not gonna be able to find the little, all the Marvel 2-in-1s and all the
all the annuals.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe a handful of people have read everything since the 60s.
I would love to talk to somebody who did.
But
I don't know anybody.
99.9% of comic readers have started somewhere and just moved forward. You can't ever catch up.
That's the fun part, is that you start somewhere and you follow those threads.
Yep. So
just too much material. You don't have the time in the day to read all those comics.
So I'm very excited for our next email.
This is my favorite one we've gotten in a while. T. Scott B., let's just... anonymity, fact's sake. MD, he's a doctor.
Oh.
T. Scott B., MD.
Which is, by the way, that's a TV show. T. Scott B., MD.
Being the resident MD, I would like to weigh in on the shapeshifter gender debate.
MD being he's a medical doctor.
Yes.
Okay.
As anatomy goes, much must be said for what goes on inside the shifter and also the hormonal issues. Let me explain. Well, first we should stop and say this is dealing with a couple of episodes back. We were discussing whether or not a shapeshifter could have a baby and... morph to a woman, have a baby, then morph back to a man, basically do whatever they want. All right, so this is a doctor's weighing in on it.
Yeah.
I would assume most shapeshifters alter their outward appearance, leaving their internal anatomy unchanged. To be a female or male, for that matter, it's not what's on the inside, outside that counts, but the hormonal milieu, if you will, determines the sex. Witness many transgendered people who have the outer workings of one sex, but internally feel they are another. Many times, these feelings are actually the process of hormonal actions in the brain. If Mystique, by default, is a true female, she would have the hormonal milieu of a female XX plus mutant chromosome and would have children by her, but her outward biology would incorporate this. On the other hand, people who shapeshift who are morphers probably lack the hormonal chemical ability to determine true sexual identity and probably cannot reproduce or at least change their internal sexual identity, unless they can somehow alter this. Morph, for example, is probably asexual, although he's depicted as male. He probably has the chemical makeup of a male. Changing his outward appearance or even internal appearance would still be of no use unless he had can fabricate or change the hormonal chemical makeup as well. In reality, most mutants would not be able to reproduce anyway. By default, most true mutations are not compatible with life, but then where would that leave us without the X-Men and true M-Day? So basically saying it's not real. It's the hormones.
It's the hormones that determine it. I think the point being that if
Thank God he spent all that money on medical school.
I think the point that if a shapeshifter is a female and I believe the idea that she would keep the guts would stay female even though the outward be, you know. But then the question begs, you know, like if it changes to a male, does it feel the same? Or not, you know, like
okay,
that.
Whoa.
I love this debate, though. This is one of my favorite things we've done in a while.
I don't want to see your Netflix queue.
If you have any questions, you can send an email to contact@ifanboy.com. Please weigh in on the shapeshifter debate. Are there any other doctors out there who
it's all about hormones.
It's all about hormones. Right now, the belief is hormones.
I want to hear from a geneticist.
Yes, that's next.
I just want to know how many really high-level educated people are listening to the show and really care. If you want to help support the show or you'd like movies, either way, you can go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy and get a free 2-week trial. They've got over 90,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping both ways, Blu-ray titles, fast deliveries, all that good stuff. We all have it, and we did even if they weren't involved with the show. So you should do that.
Yay.
And last week we said we promised the return of the voicemails last week, and we were wrong.
Unfortunately, we were wrong.
You're a stinking liar.
We forgot that we would be on the road again.
But next week is going to be an all voicemail show, so we'll solve it that
Don't
way.
Don't quote me on that.
Next week we're going to do lots of voicemails because
they're building up.
So
also wanted to mention the update on our fundraising effort for David Percola, the retailer in Michigan, who unfortunately was injured while during a robbery at a store. He's doing well. He's doing better. He's still in the ICU, but he's making good steps forward. And we have been in the process of putting together the auctions that we're going to be organizing. We've gotten some great stuff from some awesome people already, and it's going to be really cool. So start saving your money.
There is awesome stuff.
Yeah, there is.
I was like, oh, right.
So, and if you haven't donated, head over to ifanboy.com. There's a post in red that with a link to PayPal to donate. We've raised well over $6,000 already. Please help us raise more. So, thank you all.
And after you've done that, you may as well stick around at ifanboy.com. Check out the Pick of the Week written review, all the content, the written stuff that goes up every single day. There's new stuff. There's mini video shows, which we'll talk about later. But there's all sorts of good stuff at ifanboy.com. You really should go and get there, do the pull list, do all that stuff. If you're listening to the show,
yeah, and also head over to ifanboy.com/store, which is iFanboy partnering with Amazon, where you can buy all your comics, video games, music, whatever you like that's in Amazon, you can buy through us, and it helps us out in the process.
In addition to this show, we have a video show every Saturday at revision3.com/ifanboy. It's our full-length 20 to 30-minute comic book show, and this past week you watched the Emerald City Con.
Which episode, was a fun one.
Which was a fun little show.
Sometimes it's longer than 30 minutes.
A little ditty.
And next week there will be a show.
There will be a show. What that show will be?
It should be about the crises.
It might be a crisis in itself.
But I haven't actually started it.
Oh, my God.
Which I didn't realize until I started writing up the script.
Well, listen, if the show doesn't show up...
There will be a show, no matter what.
If the show doesn't show up, you can still come to iFanboy or Revision 3 every single day and get your iFanboy mini fix. We've got some treats, leftovers from the Seattle...
They're not leftovers.
No, they're not leftovers.
They're good. They're
extras,
good content.
They're extras.
It's more stuff. Whereas before we were bringing you conventions just in the 1-week show, we spread it out.
We shot more than we needed, and we put them in the minis.
Exactly.
You needed more.
Right.
You.
Me.
You
did, yes.
So and great minis coming up this week.
Yeah, so definitely check those out. Some of my favorites. If you don't have an iFanboy t-shirt, you can head over to jinx.com/iFanboy. We saw a couple of them in the wild at the Emerald City Con, which was awesome. If you ever go to a comic book convention, make sure you wear your shirt. And take a picture of yourself while you're wearing the shirt and send that into jinx.com as well as to us at contact@ifanboy.com. Jinx will send you free stickers and we'll thank you.
And you can send those pictures to contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. I promise you we will have voicemails next week.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, before we wrap this all up, that there's pages of art that touch my soul, and I think that Josh, Ron, and Connor have really helped.
I don't know where this is going.
Appreciate. I don't either.
Why don't you just do the next one?
I wonder if Eddie Vedder's on Twitter.
He should be. But anyway, I think that's all for the show, except if you wanted to come up and get with us, go to ifanboy.com/about, and you can be on social networks where they would Twitter.
Links.
And link. It's all there. Whether you want to be with them individually or as a collective unit.
It's like he's like it channels them.
It's a trance.
Yeah.
It's kind of it's very, I like to put on some candles and put the lights down low and just strum my acoustic guitar while checking out Facebook.
Do you drink anything when you do that?
I have a Beaujolais.
and so you can head over to iTunes and listen to some Pearl Jam, but then also you can head over to the iTunes podcast section and write a review about iFanboy. We're saying, you know, we've been kind of slacking on the soliciting of reviews. Yes. You don't want to campaign for yourself, but we're close to 200 folks, and we'd like to be well over 200.
Shows.
Yeah.
You've left one for the audio show, but what you're going to neglect the others?
The video shows,
a lot of work
that
goes into it. The love is there.
Yeah, so if you're listening and you enjoy it, take 2 or 3 minutes, go over there and leave us a review, good or bad, just, you know.
But most importantly, aside from iTunes, which is a great way to get the word out, but also word of mouth, get the word out. Tell your friends, if you guys read comics and they're not listening to the show or watching the show, tell them about it. Tell your store about it. We're doing our best to get the word out. We need your help.
The other day I was talking to Neil Young. And he said that he'd enjoyed the work. He's a huge Michael Lark fan.
If you like the show and want to donate some money to the cause, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, click on the donate box. Josh's psychiatry bill is not cheap.
No, it's not. It's the multiple personalities.
There's a bunch of specialists. We've got to fly in from all over the globe.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think anyone else knows who Steve Jones, like the Sex Pistols guitarist who has...
Anybody in LA should know. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So
he has a talk show.
Jonesy's Jukebox.
It's the most fascinating thing to listen to ever.
Yeah.
Stream it.
Yeah. It's really
seriously,
good.
When I was doing the script, I was typing up Next Week Crisis, and I went, oh, shit.
Yeah, you're hung up on that.
Because I didn't start it. Yeah, and it's due soon.
X-Day.
Who's that?
It's mine.
It's right, mate. Yeah.
The eyes closing is what freaks me out when he's doing these voices.
Look at you guys. If I do, I still laugh.
Alright, well, I think that's it for this week. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Eddie Vedder. I'm Steve Jones. I'm John Lennon.
The Skrull.
And I'm Josh. I'm exhausted.
Well, yeah.